We'll call the meeting to order. This is State Government Finance Committee meeting for Wednesday, April 13th, 2011. We're still a couple of members short for a quorum, but we will go ahead and start with the introduction of House File 1234, and we'll wait to make that motion until we have a quorum. Welcome, Representative Downey. You may proceed with description of the bill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill before you, 1234, is...
Representative Downey, we just got a quorum, so
okay.
I will officially call the meeting to order, and let's take the minutes, too, while we have a quorum. Someone care to move those minutes from yesterday? Representative Erdahl?
I'll move the minutes to 5 minutes yesterday.
All right. Any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. The minutes are approved. Representative Downey, go ahead and make your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would move that House File 1234 be passed and moved to re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
And there are no amendments, right?
Correct.
Okay, you may proceed.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair and members. The language in this bill is actually entirely contained in the omnibus bill. For those of you who might not remember our discussion or brief discussion of it when we were looking at the omnibus state government finance bill, this is a bill that originated in the Senate. I carried it here in the House. It took us a little time to get it heard in government operations and reform, which we did last week, and now actually able to see the bill here and pass it on as a standalone bill as well. And members, the intention here is to ask the Department of Administration to bring in an outside consultant, presumably an outside consultant, although if the state government omnibus bill were to pass, potentially the internal employee groups could also bid on this as well. But to bring in an outside group to take a look at what we're doing in terms of procurement, and we're using a term strategic sourcing very intentionally. When you think about purchasing and procurement, your mind tends to go towards buying a product from a vendor, receiving the product, and paying the bill. That's really the purchasing cycle. But sourcing is a much bigger analysis, taking a look at what we're spending throughout the entire executive branch agency set. You'll notice that we refer to the possibility of extending this beyond just the executive branch agencies as well. And depending on various sources I've seen, it appears that we have $2 billion, maybe even up to $4 billion, depending on the kinds of products and services we're lumping in of spend in state government. And so there's a lot of spending going on, and if you take a look at the entirety of what we're doing, what products are we stocking, where, how are we managing that inventory, who are we buying it from, how many vendors are we buying it from, what kind of prices do we have, all the way through efficiencies in the processes, there's a lot of opportunity, and big organizations seem to do this periodically. Probably every 5 to 10 years they'll do a fairly significant sourcing assessment and find ways to improve service and reduce cost in the doing it. And so this bill says that we would bring in an outside party to conduct kind of a rapid assessment. Usually about 3 to 6 months they'll come in, they'll extract all of the purchasing files, look at the contracts that we have across all the agencies, and do an analysis based on national and international benchmarks that they can do compared to what we're accomplishing here at the state, and provide some recommendations. Doing that oftentimes can provide 5%, even a 10% reduction in cost in those spending categories. Some opportunities are pretty high depending on the amount of money that you're spending. Some are a lot lower. We've been doing an effort here in the state already, so it may be that some of the the lowest hanging fruit or the most obvious opportunities have already been taken care of, but the potential for somebody to come in and help us do this from the outside and identify those kinds of savings and help design improvements in what we're doing is the purpose of this bill. So with that, I think, Mr. Chair, rather than spend a ton of time going into the details of the elements that we might look at, perhaps I can just open it up to questions. And I know Mr. Allen wants to testify to what the department is already doing, and we can have some discussion from there.
Should we have him come forward now? Or
be great.
Mr. Allen?
Hello again.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, Representative Downey. Thanks for the opportunity. My name is Kent Allen. I'm the Chief Procurement Officer for the state of Minnesota. I guess I want to start by thanking the committee and Representative Downey for recognizing the role that strategic sourcing can play in effective government. One of the things that you may have noticed if you were looking at the Tribune, at least online, over the last couple of days, is that the Department of Administration actually issued a RFP for a master set of contracts that would relate to data analytics in a number of different areas. So the department is pursuing opportunities to work with private sector experts in any areas where they believe there might be opportunities to help the state save resources. Representative Downey alluded to the fact that the state of Minnesota is already doing some work in strategic sourcing. That's one of the things I do want to focus on this morning. Through the last 5 years or so of the Plenty administration, the Department of Administration has operated a very aggressive strategic sourcing program. It's been nationally recognized for our success. Some examples of that, so you not know that it's not just me saying that we do good work in this area. The Pew Center on the States has done a study, which they call States Buying Smarter, Lessons Learned from Minnesota and Virginia. Additionally, Governing Magazine asked me to do a presentation in Washington, D.C. earlier this year describing the state of Minnesota's success in this area. And as one more example of sort of validation of our work by someone other than myself, Governor Plenty honored my colleague Brenda Willard in one of his State of the State addresses where he focuses on Minnesota citizens that have made significant contributions, and her contribution was for her work with respect to strategic sourcing. So certainly we see the opportunity here, although we think that we've already done a lot with that opportunity. That's not to say that there's not room for improvement. There always is. We try to operate from a continuous improvement perspective, but I do think it'd be fair to say that much of any low-hanging fruit has been picked. One of the things I've talked about in some past committees is some of the states where this sort of process has not been very successful, and I'll get back to that briefly. But I also wanted to talk about one of the states where it has been successful with private sector assistance, but then also to contrast that experience with what we've already done in Minnesota. One of the states that's been cited, and in fact was cited in the handout that was used in the Senate hearing on this topic initially, is the state of Pennsylvania, who did a significant engagement with Accenture several years ago. And I certainly can affirm that the state of Pennsylvania views this as a successful engagement on strategic sourcing. So I went back to look at the Accenture analysis to see what they had in fact done in Pennsylvania and to see what kinds of things they might have done there that we hadn't done yet in Minnesota. The Accenture process is pretty straightforward. I mean, they assemble a team of involved stakeholders, they analyze the past spend and purchasing patterns, they research the supplier base, they develop product standards and specifications for enterprise-wide contracts, they develop an evaluation and selection process and criteria, they issue a solicitation and make an award on the basis of best value rather than low bid, and then they negotiate from those responses for improved pricing and terms and conditions. And that's essentially what Minnesota has done as we've gone through our strategic sourcing activities. In addition to some initial briefing that we in Minnesota received from Accenture when we started our work, we also had contracted with Deloitte for some initial support on a project before we took it over on a state-managed basis. So when Accenture looked at Pennsylvania's opportunities, they identified 11 high-priority areas for major savings and success. Minnesota has strategically sourced all 11 of those areas. In two of them, in fact, Minnesota manages nationwide contracts. One of the theories of strategic sourcing is to aggregate as much spend as possible. And with respect to computers and pharmaceuticals, Minnesota has not only aggregated our own spend, but have done that on behalf of 46 states with respect to pharmaceuticals and 50 states with respect to computers. As we looked at these 11 opportunity areas in Minnesota, we also made some pretty hard decisions and some difficult decisions. They weren't all painless. Probably the best example of that is in the office supplies area. Some of you may be aware that Minnesota had operated its own state office supply business for over 60 years. And through the strategic sourcing initiative, we looked at the costs of operating that business compared to the costs of a private sector alternative, and we actually closed down that 60-year business and outsourced the state office supplies. Accenture also looked at a sort of a second tier of opportunities in Pennsylvania and found 26 additional opportunity areas. As I've looked at Minnesota, we've pursued all but four of those opportunity areas. And one of them involves freight, which we attempted to do some work with and were unsuccessful some years ago. And the others are actually areas where the Department of Administration's Central Procurement Office isn't really in charge of that type of purchasing. So again, the context here is not to say this isn't something the state of Minnesota should be doing, but it's to say that in large respect, it's something that we have been doing very, very aggressively. So I guess to sum up, I can say, I did want to say a little bit about some of the unsuccessful states as well, because I think this could be informative depending upon the direction we go. Some of the states that have contracted with private sector vendors, things have not worked out as well as people might have anticipated. Couple of key reasons for that. I think one is that there are many, many variables involved in the price that a state ends up paying for goods and services. And it can be extremely difficult to determine if the state's saving money, how much of that savings is actually attributable to the work of the private sector consultant versus savings that in some cases might have been because of the work of the state employees or because of other market factors. Independent of either the state employee work or the consultant work. Another problem with contracts of this nature can be the difficulty in recapturing the savings that do occur. As you know, the state financial systems are not particularly well designed to recapture money that if savings are spread across many, many state agencies and local units of government. Let me talk very briefly about a couple of states where contracts like this have gone kind of sour. State of California, the Sacramento Bee, had the headline in 2008, State Contracts Overhaul in Tatters. New Mexico firm hired to help the effort was let go, unpaid, and is suing. In Illinois, the Heartland Institute wrote, an Illinois agency that claims to have saved taxpayers $600 million by reducing waste and fraud has itself wasted money, granted multi-million dollar contracts to politically connected firms, and failed to show that it has saved money, according to a blistering audit by the Illinois Auditor General. In Iowa, the Des Moines Register reported state officials paid an out-of-state contractor $882,000 to help save $50,000 a year, according to an audit released Monday. In New Mexico, it's reported that state auditors found that savings generated by the strategic sourcing consultants were wiped out by payments to the company. In West Virginia, the governor canceled the contract after the media reported the compensation levels of the individuals working for the contractor. And lastly, in Wisconsin, several state agencies disputed the savings claimed by the strategic sourcing consultants, refused to return money to the general fund as demanded by the administration, and the contract is ultimately canceled and with state employees left to do the work. So it hasn't always worked out as anticipated. I would hope that we can and would do better than that in Minnesota. Certainly the RFP that was put out earlier this week is intended to be structured in such a way that we would have enough controls over the project to ensure better outcomes. So I guess in summary, I'd want to say I'm a great believer in strategic sourcing. I'm glad that it's being recognized as one of the tools the state has to manage its budget. My department championed the changes in the statute that allowed the use of strategic sourcing several years ago. And as bad as the state budget situation is, I believe it would be much worse had we not had the kind of program that we've had in place for the last 5 years. So I guess my final statement would be to please try to manage your expectations regarding the additional savings that might be found here, and in part because I believe we've done some exceptional work, and many of those savings have already been realized. I appreciate your time and attention, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Questions from the committee. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Downey, just I need a little bit of clarification because I don't remember what we said before, but does this still allow for the state to establish criteria like a Buy Minnesota thing or something like that in the criteria that is established for the products that we're going to, that the vendor is going to purchase?
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, good point. The specific requirement of the language in the bill is that we would retain an outside firm at their cost to come in and do the kind of upfront analysis that these types of outfits do, and that's to identify opportunities. And I don't believe there's anything in this bill. If there is, it would be a mistake. That would imply that by virtue of having identified those opportunities, that somehow current purchasing policy or other policies of the state of Minnesota in law would be superseded. Clearly, any pursuit of those opportunities would have to be consistent with state law.
Thank you. That helps.
Representative Murphy.
Two more questions, I think. So then, this consultant, I think you said, this consultant is going to look at what we're already doing and what we've been doing for 5 years on this strategic sourcing. And extrapolate from that some better ways of helping them do better. Is that correct?
Representative Downey.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, exactly. Maybe I can expand on that a little bit. Part of the genesis for this bill and having the legislature try to drive some of this initiative when, in fact, maybe there's things going on already within the administration is, I think, kind of twofold for me anyway. And one is we're spending whatever it is, $65 million, a big amount of money on this new SWIFT accounting system. That's the name of it. They're calling it the SWIFT project. And for the first time in state government, we are really going to have all in one place under this new common accounting system, pretty standardized information about all of the purchasing that we're doing, all of the vendors, all of the contracts. We will have in one place aggregate information, and we should have much more standardized and common purchasing processes as well. So the approvals and the quantities and those kinds of things, the thresholds, etc., all will be according to hopefully a common set of business rules. So we have a once in every couple decade opportunity where we've got new things happening, new ways to look at the data. And so I remember very distinctly Commissioner Badgerow upon our questioning in state government finance 2 years ago about the investment of the money into the SWIFT system, when we were questioning about where's the return on investment, and procurement savings was, I don't know if it was the only thing she mentioned, but it was the signature thing that she mentioned, that when we get a chance to aggregate all of this purchasing and our ability to go after efficiencies in the processes, savings with the contracts, that was the big opportunity that she identified. And we'd have to go back and listen to the tape. But there, if I remember right, there were some fairly big numbers that she attached to that as well. So we haven't gotten there quite yet, and I understand there might actually be a delay in the SWIFT project implementation around the procurement area. But those factors, in my mind, all conspire to say we've got a ripe opportunity to bring in somebody who does this for a living, does this literally thousands of times a year across the country in public and private sector, and bring their expertise to bear to assist the department.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
Then Representative Downey, in here when it's talking about vendors, that's the people that we're already purchasing from. And when it talks about vendor, that's the consultant.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Murphy, correct. And if I could maybe just jump on, there was another comment that I wanted to make. We're talking very specifically today so far in the discussion about the contracts we have with our supplier vendors. And actually, I think what's contemplated in this assessment is quite a bit broader than that, looking at project eliminations and deferrals, looking at the actual process and the business processes and the number of people and the approvals and all the different things that go on, doing an audit of supplier payments. You can oftentimes find just overpayments, missed billings from vendors that drive to significant savings. And again, when you have $2 billion, $4 billion worth of spending going on, even just a small percentage improvement in something can literally lead to millions, maybe even tens of millions of dollars in some places, even 5 to 10% savings just by doing a really full-blown scan of what we're doing and improving in it.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you very much. And then just address the consultant's going to come in at their expense, but they're going to get all of the savings or part of the savings? Does the state retain if there's a bundle and the consultant get that a percentage, or can you expand on that a little bit? Then I'll be done.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the bill would require the Department of Administration to bring in a consultant at the consultant's cost, and this is very typical of their arrangements, that they'll come in and do 3 month, maybe 6 month max, kind of an analysis and identify opportunities. And after that, the state would contract with that vendor, that consultant, that outside party, on some kind of a success basis. And typically that's a percentage of savings. Where there's really big opportunities, potentially like this, you would tend to have caps or kind of decelerating or de-escalating percentages of, you know, might be 10% of the first $1 million and, you know, 5% of the next $1 million in savings, or, you know, kind of a, so that the state is actually garnering the bulk of the savings, but the contractor is being fairly rewarded for the value that they added in the process.
Thank you.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for Mr. Allen, thanks for your testimony. I noticed that this bill has a fiscal note. It's north of $400,000. It's two FTEs. I'm wondering if you can comment about the ability of the agency to do this, essentially, either absorb it or do it. I don't know that we're going to have a freestanding appropriation here in this bill. Maybe we will later. I'm not sure. But given, well, let's just take the bill that we passed off the House floor. It was a 12 or 13% cut to the agency. Given that, and given the extra $400,000+ in two FTEs, could you talk a little bit about the feasibility of doing this under those circumstances?
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, sure. The fiscal note has two positions in it because we do think it's a fairly labor-intensive process, particularly if we move beyond this assessment phase. Even there, it's a major part of the responsibility of the land on the state is preparing and making available the data that'll be needed by the consultants to do their work. So one of the positions that we have in here is sort of the data analyst and link to the state information. As Representative Downey alluded, the most of the functionality in the SWIFT system as it relates to procurement is being deferred past July 1 of this year, which was the initial implementation date. So the task of collecting that data will be significant. And then the biggest challenge, I think, in doing this well is the whole issue of identifying what the savings are and which of those savings are fairly attributed to the vendor. One of the areas that Representative Downey mentioned where I agree with him, there's actually some good opportunity we haven't pursued very fully, is the vendor billing audits. And that's one where I think it's considerably more straightforward if the vendor identifies savings and actually manages a collection effort where a vendor repays money that they had overcharged the state. That's one where the complexity of figuring out what was saved and who the beneficiary should be is a little bit less complicated. But when you get into these other things where you're trying to figure out what the consultant did, what the state did, and what was just the natural market conditions impacting new contract pricing, we really think you need somebody involved in this who's looking at it from sort of the financial audit perspective of the project to be able to determine what savings are there and how they'd be allocated. So one of the two positions really is sort of a keep an eye on the numbers and the alleged savings so the state has a handle on that and that works. It's not easy. I mean, when we did our initiative, we had a committee headed up by the Department of Finance's budget guy, or accounting guy, Ron Movitz, trying to figure out how we would assess the savings coming out of our strategic sourcing efforts. And he's a very smart guy and understands this sort of thing better than I ever will. And that committee never could come to a recommendation or resolution about how we track savings, even when it was an academic exercise within government where the impact was just for our better understanding of what we've accomplished and there was no financial consequence to a vendor or the state for figuring that out. So that's a very difficult piece, and that's why we thought we needed a resource there to handle that.
Representative Downey.
If I could just comment briefly on the fiscal note, and unfortunately things were moving kind of fast, and I didn't see the fiscal note, or I didn't get a chance to really look at it in detail until probably after we were even beyond our omnibus bill preparation phase. But I didn't. I will admit that I didn't understand it. You know, in theory, this is at risk for the outside contractor to come in and do this. And I know the department has people dedicated to strategic sourcing, so I kind of initially assumed that it would just be, you know, of the 10 projects they have going, that there would be a new one or two that would be related to supporting the outside contractor. And I don't know where the exact status is of these projects in the SWIFT implementation, but obviously we're converting tons of data, presumably some of the history as well, across the procurement functions of all of the state agencies, and bringing all those data files together to be imported into the new system to be ready to roll. And so my assumption was that the data collection activity has largely been accomplished. Now I'm understanding that maybe that isn't the case. There might be more work on the part of the vendor to support that. But then again, the bill, I think, says that we do this kind of upfront proof of concept analysis phase, and knowing what the vendors do, that's literally only 3 to 6 months. So the only commitment for the state would be to support the outside contractor for 3 to 6 months, and it's only if we can identify material savings that you would have an ongoing commitment by state resources to support the vendor. and there are no savings documented at all in the fiscal note, just the cost of the people to support the production of the savings. So we'll just have to work out the fiscal note issues with the department during the conference committee phase. But in my mind, had there been a little bit of expense in the first 3 to 6 months, the first year of the biennium, fair enough. But the fiscal note seems to presume that we're doing the full-blown project. But the only way we'd be doing the full-blown project is if there were substantial or material savings, is how the bill words it. So I think fairly we would have at least been registering some of those savings in the fiscal note as well.
Representative Kahn.
I think this is actually pursuing the last two questions and comments together. But I guess for Mr. Allen, is there someone auditing when you say that this strategic sourcing is being done in the in administration already? So what is the audit system in place to track that? And couldn't we just look at this as increasing the work of that division rather than adding an entire new person?
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, there's no formal audit system because there's no financial consequence of our success, because we're not taking that money away from, we're creating contracts at lower dollar values that reduce costs to agencies, but we didn't come up, and again, this is kind of what the Department of Finance Committee tried to help us wrestle with and never came up with a satisfactory solution. And because it's really an academic issue as to how much we've saved, we haven't put immense effort into a process that would fully validate that.
Well,
I mean, it's primarily a motivating force for us to have a sense of our accomplishment.
Well,
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Allen, I guess it seems to me that if you're doing something that's new and different, it ought to be useful to track and see how successful it is. So, just to try and get an analysis of how well government is functioning. And along the same line, let me just put this second question out at the same time, although this may be, I'm not sure which of the two of you this is directed to. But it seems to me, if without obviously having the consultant doing the auditing, isn't there the possibility of also, as part of the charges to the consultant, also charging the auditing and the follow-up into that, with making sure, of course, that it's not done by the same person, so that you had that was in place. So that's to both or either or.
Mr. Downey?
I'd be glad to answer, and then Mr. Allen can maybe provide some more of the particulars. But I think this is at least in part, just evidence of how difficult it is to manage purchasing when the function is highly distributed and being done on all kinds of different systems. And obviously the benefit of putting everything onto the SWIFT system gives you one central place where Department of Administration can actually begin to start tracking these things and auditing these things centrally. So I don't want to answer for Mr. Allen, but that would be my just kind of out-of-the-box answer. And I think it also speaks to the potential opportunity that we have once we do have this centralized system and apply a burst of energy internally and presumably through this bill, through some external folks to come in and take a look at it and get those mechanisms in place. And it is tough to measure these savings, but that's part of the job of the consultant, is to help you define the metrics and the mechanics for how you're going to track what you really did save and didn't save. And hopefully the consultant could leave a nice auditing mechanism for the state going forward, even when they're done with their work.
Mr. Allen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, thanks. I guess I would agree with the comments Representative Downey made on this point. And then with respect to Representative Kahn's question, despite the failure to conclude with a process that all parties signed off on as the definitive analysis of our savings, we do internally track savings, and some of which are more clear-cut than others. I mean, one of the areas where we think the savings are less subjective is with respect to the savings we've negotiated off the best price offered by vendors in their response to solicitations. And over the last two fiscal years, we have very reliable data that would show that we reduced the best price offered by over $60 million on the various contracts that we negotiated. And that one is less subjective than many, but even there, we're not going back to agencies and saying, we saved you $60 million, and we need to come up with $20 million to pay a vendor and are going to take some share of $40 million back from you, which, I mean, when you add that element of distributing the benefit across a variety of interested parties, it gets obviously more difficult.
Well,
Mr.
Chairman, I still don't think I've had the answer to my question, which is, couldn't the contract with the vendor be written so that the cost of order, it's kind of like, you know, 100 years ago when I used to have contracts with the university, all of them had an overhead component to it. So, for example, couldn't this be an overhead component to this contract that would cover the cost of auditing and follow through? And so it would be a specific requirement attached to this contract.
Mr. Allen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, theoretically, I think you're right, and I think Representative Downey sort of alluded to that. You wouldn't want the same vendor auditing their success, but another third party who's not financially dependent on the outcome could very possibly pull that.
Okay, I just, you know, I would just write it to make sure that the language included that requirement in the contract.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Allen, you even alluded to the fact that the governor, I think it was a week ago last Monday, has issued an order, I guess, to the department to begin pursuing analytics and I think you even said procurement. I know that there is similar analytics language in the Senate bill. The chief author is the senator from my district. I didn't go into in specific details about procurement, but I'm wondering when governor came to the departments and said that they were going to move through this, did he authorize, and you correct me, you know, if his issue or order didn't say, you know, procurement like, you know, we see it here today, but did he say, you know, hire two people? I mean, was that something that came through loud and clear that this is going to be additional work, or was this something that the departments were going to have to absorb?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, I don't know that the governor was personally involved in any of the fiscal note discussions. He certainly didn't either say, do it without resources to me, or as far as I know, my commissioner, Spencer Cronk, or do it with two people.
Representative Benson. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry if I missed this discussion at the beginning. Interesting House File 1234. You mentioned the conference committee, and I wonder if this bill has been passed in the Senate?
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chairman, yes, this bill was traveling ahead of its path here in the House, and Representative Winkler was really hoping for House File 1111, but all I could get was 1234. So.
we keep going long enough, Representative Downey, you might get to 4321. So then, Mr. Chair, this bill is this basically is sort of a courtesy hearing in this committee, and the intention is to take this up and adopt the Senate language in the conference committee. Is that what I'm picking up on?
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, I believe the language in the two bills is identical unless theirs was amended somewhere along the way. I don't know if there's any difference in the bill languages in the House versus the Senate positions. I'd have to check and see whether theirs got amended along the way. But originally it was this exact language.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I guess if this language was in our bill and it's in the Senate bill, why are we hearing it?
It's in our bill?
We're hearing this bill because we wanted to underscore the importance of this initiative and have another vehicle for having it considered. We're following the lead of Representative Kahn, who has...
Be very, very careful, Mr. Chair.
She has taught us well that you need more than one way to present a bill. So. Representative Winkler.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wonder if you're procuring a vehicle with this bill, potentially. But back to the, I guess, just merits of it. Mr. Allen, are there benchmarks for procurement efficiency or effectiveness? Are there financial benchmarks that we can use to determine whether... I mean, I think everything you know we get sounds like things are going well in Minnesota, but is there a way of comparing apples to apples to other states or to know whether we are getting, you know, the most stuff per dollar that we possibly can or the most effective means of procurement that we can? Because, you know, this proposal you know, is interesting. It shares savings with a vendor, which, you know, ideally you wouldn't have to do. If you want to save tax dollars, you want to keep all the savings for the taxpayers rather than paying it out to a private vendor. So to me, the way to understand whether that's necessary is to understand how well we're doing in procurement in general and if there is some objective benchmark that we can compare to, I think it would be helpful for sorting that out.
Mr. Allen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, the state procurement offices have a good network across the 50 states, and we share information frequently. We ask each other questions on a listserv, and have other states are very good about making their contract information and pricing available to us for purposes of analysis.
Mr. Chair, if I...
Representative Downey.
Yeah, I might add one thing, and that's that the outside firms that specialize in this kind of their entire value proposition is the ability to benchmark and identify where there are other contracting opportunities, and even down to the point where, you know, the invoice to pay business process can be analyzed, and you can benchmark yourself against other states in terms of the time and the effort required to do all of those things. So I think the benefit of an outside firm is that they specialize in this. They see it in both the public and private sector, and they have very it isn't kind of the professional association comparison and sharing of best practices. It is a pretty rigorous data-driven and metric-driven analysis where you can benchmark yourself against some other standards and see where you do have opportunities for improvement. So I think that's the benefit of the outside firm coming in.
Well,
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, would those firms be willing to share information with the public before they got the contract? Because otherwise we're just sort of taking that on faith that they know better ways of squeezing money out and can provide the same level of service or quality of procurement product, I guess. You know, it's sort of, or do we take it on faith that the procurement folks at the agencies are getting the best deal that they can and best understand the needs of the agencies that they procure for? So can we, you know, if the private vendors do it, do we get to know what they know before we sign them up?
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, like most private endeavors, that's largely intellectual property. They've spent millions and millions aggregating that data and putting it in a position where others can take advantage of it. So I doubt that they would share that publicly. That is what they're selling. And I don't think we're taking anything on faith here either way. It does say that the vendor does this at their cost in the upfront assessment phase, and then after that, clearly they will have to have demonstrated material savings to the state before the state would ever engage in the follow-on contract to engage that contractor to help them find the savings. So I don't think I disagree with how you characterized or framed the issue there.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, that wouldn't be the first time. but, you know, what we're talking about is saving tax dollars and giving a percentage of it to an outside vendor. And if we could bring that function in-house and save that same money, we would actually be saving all of it instead of having to give some of it to somebody else. And if we had better information about you know, how we compare, that would be helpful for deciding whether we're getting the best value for the dollar or not. But it doesn't sound like the private vendor wants to share, and it and it sounds like there is, you know, a network of professionals in the area, but not necessarily benchmarks. And maybe it's not possible. Maybe you can't compare one state's procurement needs to another. But you know, if there are private vendors doing this and they're in competition, why don't we just hire some of their employees? And then for a fraction of the cost, we would get all the savings.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dowdy.
Thank you. And I think you're raising a bigger question. We had the same discussion, at least briefly, in the State Government Operations Committee. But every organization has got to look at what its core competencies are and what it actually wants to hire and maintain staff to perform. And for an organization the size of the state of Minnesota, you know, I think there's an opportunity on the highly repetitive and high volume, relatively low skilled end to outsource and utilize outside firms, those kinds of things that are in the yellow pages and routinely done by other firms. And then there's a set of things that are one-off opportunities where it would be extremely expensive. I mean, these outside firms literally have strategic sourcing practice groups of dozens, maybe even hundreds of individuals that aggregate all of their talent and data and bring them in a very targeted way to the benefit of the state of Minnesota. And, I mean, we'll make up some numbers here, but if there's $100 million in savings that the state of Minnesota might not have realized had they not brought somebody in, it's perfectly reasonable, I think, to pay that outside party some share of that. And as you all know, in the state government omnibus bill, there's a provision that would allow state employees to band together and propose on this work. And if they have better tools and better aggregate data and better benchmarks and can win the business, they certainly could. So I don't know, you characterize this as though we're somehow wasting money, and I don't think we are. I think we're just intelligently deploying in a very targeted way, a very strategic way, the skills and assets of an outside firm for a limited basis.
Mr. Chair, I'll just
Representative Winkler
finish with this, that it seems to me if there is somebody who is experts in procurement, it would be the professionals who do the procurement for states, and that outside vendors, even if, you know, I mean, the model that you're, the business model is basically you go in, you analyze what they're doing, you identify any low-hanging fruit, and you take a percentage cut. Why wouldn't we just pay them by the hour to do the same thing? Because if you're talking about $100 million in savings, I don't know what percentage we have to pay the firm in order to get that $100 million, but if it's just money sitting out there that needs to be collected, we'd be much better off paying an outside vendor hourly for their expertise than to collect the, you know, $100 million in savings for the taxpayers rather than paying them a percentage. And if it's not that easy and the numbers start getting smaller and smaller, and we're still paying a percentage, we're still getting limited value out of it, and kind of the promise of $100 million in savings won't be realized anyway. So it just seems to me that if this is really worthwhile, we would want to be able to do it on our own or to pay somebody on an hourly basis or a project basis to analyze the savings and try to come up with the maximum amount. And if they do a good job, then they get another contract. If they don't, they go to another state and try to hook up with somebody who will give them a percentage of whatever money they can come up with.
Representative Downey?
Mr. Chairman, I can't speak for every outside contractor, but I think most of them would love to be paid on an hourly basis for this work. But this is the type of project where you get paid for what you deliver. And not just based on showing up. So I guess if the state wanted to contract for it hourly, I'd say that's probably the wrong way to do it, but the outside contractors would probably love it.
Well, Mr. Chair, if they would love to do it hourly, that would indicate to me that they're not likely to find all that much in savings. Otherwise, they should want to do the percentage.
Representative Downey, is it not true that most large corporations also engage outside consultants to come in and help them figure out how to better do something?
Mr. Chairman, all the time. It's just a matter of identifying what your core competency is and isn't, and finding the right people to engage on the things that you do once every 5 years, every 10 years, and it doesn't make sense to have staff, or the things you do so many times every day that somebody who specializes in that activity can do it better, cheaper, and faster for you. That is just the way organizations evolve to become more effective.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to add to that comment, which is I've worked for a couple big corporations, and one thing I've observed is that there's the pendulum swings in both directions. Like, and I'm sure you've seen this too, where companies decide, you know what, it's going to be more efficient if we outsource marketing communications. So yeah, a bunch of contractors are hired and it's outsourced. Then 2 years later, somebody else thinks, you know what, I think we could save money on overhead if we actually bring that in and have our internal expertise. So then the project comes inside. So, you know, I think it's a fad. I just want to add. So the question I was actually going to ask you about was, and I ask this with all humility, I'm really wishing I had read this Pew report. The Pew Center of the States report that talks about what Minnesota does. And I'm wondering, Representative Downey, if you've read it and how the information that's in that report influenced how this bill took shape, because it sounds as if we're doing some things really well, and I wondered how that's been acknowledged.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, I'm actually, Representative Green, I'm not familiar with the Pew report. I'm basing this recommendation, I'll say maybe on four things, and the first was the Drive to Excellence report, which is a very detailed review of all of the processes and systems across all of the executive branch agencies. I guess it's got to be 8 years ago now, and a series of recommendations there. The obvious need to, second would be the obvious need to implement the SWIFT system to put our accounting functions on the same IT platform. And thirdly, the challenge at this committee, I think, at least I and others have repeatedly given to Department of Administration and MMB, that there has to be some kind of return on investment from that $65 million IT system implementation. And we've got a number of proposals, that some that made it in our omnibus bill and some that didn't, to take advantage of that new asset. And then fourthly would be Commissioner Badgerow's own statements before this committee a couple of years ago that the biggest return on investment of the SWIFT system would be in the sourcing and procurement area. So I really think this is, and I don't know the Pew study or the Pew report, you know, it's entirely possible we're doing a great job. My experience in my own consulting business was that people always thought they were doing a good job in certain areas, and you bring in a very focused lens and a targeted activity, and you put everybody together focused on something, and you know what, there's a lot of opportunities. So that's what this bill is going after, is let's identify the opportunities on and capitalize them, are and capitalize on them if we can.
Thanks. I do have a quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this report sounds really interesting to me because the Pew Center is just like way up there in terms of stature, nonpartisan, good research, excellent data. So I'm looking forward to going and reading it. I wonder, Mr. Allen, do you have a comment on that report and kind of what it said and how what it said fits in with what we're discussing here?
Mr. Allen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, I think it validates my general perspective that Minnesota is viewed as a leader nationally in effective procurement. Doesn't say we're perfect, doesn't say that we couldn't learn from private sector input, but I mean it chose to focus on two states that it believes are good examples of best practices in public procurement. And the primary focus with respect to Minnesota is a discussion of our strategic procurement initiatives over the last year and our success with those.
Representative Kahn.
Yes, well, Mr. Chairman, actually my specialty was not doing separate bills multiple times. It was putting the same item in multiple bills that other people were doing. So I just want to clarify that. But there's a weird word in this.
There's not a whole lot of difference there.
There's a weird word in this bill, and that's on line 2.4. Which says, which we usually don't see in things that are requiring an RFP to go out, which says the Commissioner of Administration shall select the vendor from the responses to the request. I mean, what if all the responses are, we analyze them and they're kind of rotten and we don't like them? Shouldn't that shall be a may? Isn't that what we usually have in this kind of language? We're telling them to go out and put out an RFP and then to say that no matter what the return is, we have to select someone.
Representative
Mr. Allen, I guess I don't know. What's the usual way in which we do this?
It's Representative Downey's bill. I think he should be given the first chance to comment to your proposed amendment here. Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, you raise a good point because when the state puts out an RFP, standard RFP procurement language says the state is not bound to issue a contract off just because we let an RFP. So I think we probably do need to work on the wording there and make sure that it doesn't bind their hands in a way that they typically wouldn't through a procurement.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Khan.
Is it a lot of work to change the shall to may? Do you want it in a different language or something like that? I can give it to you in
Chairman,
German,
I,
French,
I would,
Greek, or Russian.
Incorporate Representative Khan's oral amendment if she chooses to make one.
Yes, I'll propose that the shall become may.
Okay, Representative Downey is incorporating the amendment on line 2.6.
2.4.
Changing shall to may. Mr. Shepard, do you have that?
The one on 2.6 is okay, but the 2.4 one.
I'm sorry.
It's a bill.
Yeah, 2.4, yeah. Mr. Shepard, you've got the...
to a bill, Mr. Chairman, I think the committee has to vote is the issue.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I was going to...
Okay.
All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The amendment is adopted. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Allen, you mentioned in your opening statements different states that had gone through strategic sourcing, I believe, and that several of them, maybe a dozen of them, had failed or whatever they had in place didn't work. What did they go back to? What was their after their failure of using this system? Because you mentioned you were looking at data analytics yourselves in the state here. What did these states then turn to for procurement as far as a system to work out there, trying to look for savings in their system?
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I don't know that I could answer that with respect to all or probably even the majority of the states I referenced. I mean, in several instances, the media information I have on those states indicates that they canceled a contract, which presumably means that they went back to relying on state employees. It's not inconceivable that they issued another RFP and found another vendor they were more satisfied with. My guess would be in most cases they relied on state staff after that experience, but it is a guess.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Allen, would you say, because you had mentioned that you felt that what we're doing in Minnesota is relatively good, and would you compare us to any other state that's similar in how they procure? I know you said you have contact with other states as far as what they do, and I'm just wondering if you can compare, or are we the best?
Mr. Allen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I probably can't be very objective on the question of whether we're the best. I certainly would hope that any objective party would put us in the top five, and I think they would. I mean, as Governing Magazine looks at surveys of states in multiple areas, they've ranked our purchasing and contracting work as one of the elements of Minnesota work that ranks the highest. We have more flexibility in our procurement laws than most states. I've worked with you, Representative Anderson, on reverse auction language. I've worked with Representative Khan on a number of bills that have moved the state from sort of a low bid state to more of a better value cost of ownership state. So, I mean, I think we've done a very good job of using the tools of procurement and statutory reform and so forth to give us a good foundation to work from. But again, as I've said several times, it's always a continuous improvement exercise. You never reach a point where you're good enough.
Thank you. Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Downing, I'm actually not going to bug you about why we should do this today. I kind of get now that your party is all about creating another layer because somehow state government's inefficient. Having said that, I guess my question is, if we know other states are having issues with private contractors doing this, and I don't see anything in your bill that addresses that, how do we do that process, assuming that we're going to do this to assure that we're not sitting there in lawsuits and all this stuff for canceling contracts? Because I think that's the part of the bill that you haven't really addressed in your bill. So I'm wondering what your viewpoint on that is.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gauthier. The state's procurement statutes govern those kinds of things and policies and standard contract language and things that the Department of Administration currently does today would govern all of that. I don't want to prescribe that in my bill. And there's no doubt about it. When you do a share in savings kind of contract with an outside party, you've got to be extremely careful about defining exactly how you're going to measure it, exactly how you're going to pay it. And I'm guessing that that's where those other contracts broke down as compared, well, I shouldn't say that because I don't know those particular examples, but in a strategic sourcing pay-for-performance kind of contract, the detail of how you track where those savings came from and how you're going to measure it and how you're going to pay is absolutely critical, and I assume the state would do a good job defining that contract as such.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative Gauthier.
So if we're going to define it in contract procurement, why wouldn't we just do it, I guess? I guess I am going to ask you the question why we're going to do it. If we're setting the benchmarks, then that tells me that we're capable of doing it. And I get your, it's more of a comment, Representative Down. I get that you think that it's good to have somebody looking out after seeing something that we might miss, but I'll leave it at that.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to stay out of this conversation too. So, like you, sort of drawn to the flame. Let me see if I can help us understand this a little bit. I was particularly struck during Representative Winkler's comments that perhaps we haven't quite understood the role of the incentives here in sort of writing incentive compatible contracts between outside vendors and the state. We really do want to have contracts that incentivize the firm to provide us with the savings and incentivize the state to both supervise the savings and find ways to capture them. And the way I was thinking about this, in fact, was the fact that I've worked as an outside contractor myself on a number of contracts overseas on behalf of largely USAID, a couple other international agencies, but largely via the State Department. And in almost all of those cases, one of the big things we emphasized was the transfer of technology and transfer of knowledge between an outside vendor and the people you were working for. So, for example, when I worked in Ukraine, the whole job in Ukraine was simply to transfer the knowledge of how to do economic research for a national bank, and this was something that I had spent a long time doing, and have done so in a lot of other places. You leave something behind, and there's even an example here in state government that I think Representative Kahn may know about, which was back in the 80s when we were struggling with the budget crisis in the early 80s. We needed new forecasting of state revenues. We went out and hired an outside firm to do that. over the succeeding 6 years, the state figured out pretty much a fair amount of what had happened and how the forecasting was being done. So eventually, the outside vendor didn't have to do as much, and more of it got done in-house. The technology had been transferred, and so that the people that we had here learned how to do it, were able to take over those functions and to do their job better. So I think there's something very valuable in the outsourcing process, which in fact includes the transfer of knowledge from outside. People inside government try as hard as they can to do the best job. They just simply don't know everything, and there are folks outside that know something that's valuable. And I think this is a good proposal for simply that reason. I think the Department of Administration would learn things through this process so that eventually we don't have to have contracts anymore, and you're able to capture those savings yourself without needing a contractor any further. Thank you.
Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also, I know I was a little bit late. I had a couple of questions, but one of them was if the department is in favor of this. So I wanted to ask that of the department, or maybe it's been asked.
Mr. Allen.
Madam Chair, Representative Slawick, I'm going to dance around your question a little bit, I'm afraid. The department is in favor of the approach that the governor's office has taken, which is to put out an RFP that is comprehensive with respect to better use of data in any number of areas across government. One of those that's specifically cited in the RFP that was issued this week is strategic sourcing. So we are actively soliciting public sector responses to hear what companies believe they can do for us in that area. One of the focuses that's specifically called out is the one that I mentioned earlier, where I think there is a good opportunity that we haven't taken as far as we could, and that's the audit of vendor billing. But if there are other strategic sourcing proposals that the public sector wants to put forward, we're very open to hearing those. The RFP that we put out from administration is more flexible with respect to payment options. Representative Winkler was talking about why wouldn't we pay on a time and materials basis. The proposal that the RFP that was issued earlier by administration asks responders to tell us what they would charge if they were charging on an hourly fee basis, and also to describe the sort of contingent fee approaches that are envisioned in Representative Downey's bill. So I think what the department supports is a somewhat broader, more flexible approach that gives that's a little less prescriptive for my department and other state agencies, but still allows us to take advantage of the best that the private sector might be able to bring to this discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slawick.
Well, Mr. Chair, and to the members and to Representative Downey, I mean, one thing was when we have, as we know, we have all these proposals that are proposing all these savings is, and I don't know if anybody has the answer necessarily, can we, in these is RFP process, can it happen quick enough for the end of session that we know that those savings would be captured in those RFPs? I mean, are they required to capture the savings in there? In other words, to say, so verify that $99 million would be saved, like through tax analytics? Would that be possible to get? I just think we have 6 weeks about to go here, and this occurred to me, well, maybe that's something we could ask for.
That's probably more of a question for the administration than it is. Mr. Allen, I don't know if you want to respond to that.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Downey.
With respect to Bill House File 1234, we unfortunately were unable to book any savings with regard to our bill. The fiscal note came back with the costs and no savings, so we've honored that and aren't booking any savings, though my own sense is that there's a decent opportunity here, and we very reasonably could see those kinds of savings. In this particular case, the assessment period, literally, you come in and do a rapid procurement analysis, and that can be done in 3 months if the data is halfway decent, maybe 3 to 6 months to get your opportunities identified and start executing. Very clearly, you have the opportunity for significant savings in this biennium if you do your work in the first 6 months of the biennium and then realize the savings for the remaining 18 months. So with regard to your comment on this bill, I think we're really solid.
Representative Slawik, I would say in response, first of all, I commend the governor for his initiative. And that's good news that he recognizes that there may be some potential here and that we ought to investigate. I would hope that before too long that the governor and the administration would take the next step, and that is to acknowledge that there is potential here and what that those savings might be with regard to these different initiatives. And it remains to be seen whether that next step will be taken by the administration. I hope it is.
Mr. Chair, I just have a follow-up. I think that is the really important step. I mean, if we could verify or get the RFPs in time to verify they're willing to guarantee some kind of savings at the level we're talking about, then, as you know, that brings validity to the process. I just wanted to comment, Representative Downey, and kind of on Representative Banyan's comments. You know, I sat on an RFP process for the Department of Education this year because we were very skeptical. One thing that tends to happen in these RFP processes is the same companies get hired year after year, and so we're kind of like, you know, why is it the same ones? And there's I think, Representative Downey, and maybe to the department, there's a formula. I mean, we got the proposals. So there's a blind panel that gets them. You don't know who's on there, and you're rating your proposals. And then there's a formula by which they grade them. 50% of it is cost. It's just a straight-up cost. They get an extra 50% point advantage for cost, so there's a temptation for companies to underbid, at least in education. And so then you did your other things on quality of work, the type of product that they were going to produce, the type of staff they were going to hire. So you may have a really high-quality proposal from the U that's expensive, so it gets dumped because it didn't meet the cost requirements. Or you might have this company that wins a lot of contracts that it just knows how to write the grant proposals and the RFPs, and so then they get hired. And it's something that's, I guess, Representative Downey or to the Department of Administration, is that formula? I mean, all these RFPs would go through the same formula that we do through all of our RFP processes. And just to say what happened in education is we got $100,000 grants through the stimulus money. And when you're doing, so they put out 10 RFPs concurrently, which is something like we're thinking of doing this session. And it was, they had a lot of trouble managing it. They had a lot of trouble. We aren't even sure what the results are now. And I can say that's a different department and a different work, but and the work that was done may not even move forward. In other words, when you get your results of who your best vendor is or your best ideas are, now we don't have the money to implement some of them. So then they're stalled out, about half of them. So there's just, it's when you really get into the details, it's complicated. So if I can just, can you answer the question of is it the standard RFP process we would go through?
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Slawik, yes, we would go through a fairly standard RFP process. The formula you described is not a rigid one.
Okay.
50% for cost is actually higher than what you would see in most professional service contracts. I mean, we do think cost matters a lot, so the statute just says cost has to be a consideration, but the department policy is cost has to be at least 30% of the weight.
Okay.
Unless you ask for an exception, and few agencies do, but if there was a particular fact situation in which an agency could make a good case for considering cost as less than 30% of the evaluative criteria, we would consider that and potentially approve that. The thing that's most unique about the RFP that we just issued is that it's intending to create a set of master contracts, so it's a very broad array of services being requested. There are some specific subject areas that are identified, and then there's also some more general ones where vendors might have analytic services, ones where vendors might have analytic services that they could propose that are less focused on a particular area like Medicaid fraud or strategic sourcing. So the most unique thing about this RFP is just its breadth and the fact that it's intending to solicit proposals from lots of different companies who have different areas of expertise.
And Representative Downey, I suppose, have you looked into that process, or are you familiar with how the RFP process goes? And you know, what we worry about, I'll just tell you, is that, for instance, on Representative Stensrud's, when we had the guy come in about the CGIP processing, are there a lot of vendors that do this? I mean, do you feel there's a sufficient, you know, I would say in the proposals we got, we looked at 6 maybe for each educational process. Some variation. Some were just your basic. They just churned the thing out, and others were really thoughtful. And did you have a company in mind for this?
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair and Representative Slawick, a couple of generalized comments. I spent many, many years contracting with governmental entities, so I'm quite familiar with the RFP response process. And I believe in Minnesota this would apply here too. You have to be on the approved vendor list for various types of services and commodities. And what you'll find for kind of highly strategic, highly specialized areas like this, there are only a large handful of legitimate competitive vendors in these areas. If you were looking for a Oracle database programmer, there would be thousands of them in Minnesota. You ask somebody who has experience in large organization, public sector, strategic sourcing, you know what, there's only a handful. And that's just the way it is. So I think the state has done a nice job with its upfront screening process. I think the state is, like most other states, they have a rather cumbersome contracting process, but it has all the necessary controls for the state. Outside vendors may not like it, but it is what it is. And I think states have learned to go after best value in their RFP and contracting processes as compared to simply looking at cost. And, you know, again, certain things are highly commoditized, and there you do crank the cost factor up. Things that are highly strategic and highly variable, where the approach is very different, you definitely want to go a best value and not have cost be as high a consideration. And, you know, with regard to the type of contract that the state would enter into here, my own opinion, and we're not going to stipulate that here in this bill or in state law, is we should be really focused on outcomes and deliverables and milestones. And I'd be hesitant to do a time and materials fee-for-service engagement in some of these areas without really holding those vendors' feet to the fire to deliver some real results. So my own personal opinion is that we'd be better off having a little higher emphasis on performance-based and share and savings-based as compared to straight-up time and materials.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if this is perhaps to Mr. Allen, the suggestion that I made that if there's a requirement for outside audit that it be included in the RFP and that it be part of the cost, paying for that be part of the cost of the proposal based on the vendor. Is it necessary to write that into the language, or can that just be done? You know, do we have to micromanage what the RFP should say, or can we just not fund that audit position and imply that it's coming, or should we write language that says that it has to come out of the project?
Mr. Allen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I don't think you'd need a directive to do that. I mean, we'd have the authority to issue an RFP for that additional component or that service if that was appropriate.
Representative Winkler, and then we're, I think, done.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Okay. Representative Murray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Downey, I like this bill. Even in my small financial services company, I have found cost savings by going to outside vendors in technology and marketing in different places. And, yes, they're small, but, you know, $20,000 on a million-some company is a big deal. And I would think as we look at bigger and bigger firms, we should be able to find some of these savings. It's amazing to me, as being on the inside looking at your firm, it looks a lot different than being on the outside coming in to look at a firm. And I think that's the key here, is that you can be inside the company working or be inside state government working, and things look one way. It's a little tougher to see some of those savings So I think this is a good bill. I think this makes a lot of sense. And if we don't find anything, nothing ventured, nothing gained, I guess. I think it makes sense, though, to at least take that look. We can all improve the way we do business. We may be doing business very well in government, but every government or every person in government, every small business can do a little bit better. So thank you.
Representative Downey, closing comments, and then you can renew your motion.
So, Mr. Chair, I'll just renew my motion that House File 1234 be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. The bill is passed. Members.
Oh, yeah, we got a vote.
Members, we have another person who's celebrating a birthday today, our administrator, Joe Marble. Happy birthday.
We made it another year.
I think he's somewhere between Travis Wozlik and Representative Kahn in terms of age. We won't ask him to specify, so somewhere in between. Members, tomorrow we will have House File 210. There will be no public testimony. We've done that. We will be taking amendments and voting on the bill tomorrow. Representative Gauthier?
Mr. Chairman, on that, now I've heard through the grapevine that it's another delete all from the author. Is there going to be any chance to see that bill before we get to committees?
It's been posted. It's okay. Already online. Was online yesterday already.
Okay.
I told them that they needed to get it out there and online so people would have an opportunity. And yes, it is DE6.
Okay. Thank you.
And amendments will again be due here by noon today. So,
Mr. Chair,
and Representative Slavik.
Mr. Chair, is there a fiscal note out too as well?
Yes, Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and members, we do have a new fiscal note requested. We've asked for it to be done by noon, and as a result of that, we're waiting for the fiscal note to finalize the numbers that would be put in the bill. So the DE6 does have some blank appropriations in it, and once the fiscal note is completed, we'll have a technical amendment. It will be a technical amendment tomorrow to put the numbers in the bill. So that amendment will not be done by noon because we're waiting.
Okay.
For the fiscal note.
When, Mr. Chair, so when would it be posted? When would we be able to see a copy of that? Will it be posted, or will it be distributed or emailed? Or
Mr. Chair and Representative Slawick, I will, after the fiscal note is completed, I'll have to talk to the author of the bill and then have the amendment drafted. So it would, I assume, be sometime this afternoon.
Mr. Chair, we're just, obviously, it would be helpful to see that ahead
of
time.
Yes, I agree.
Yes.
And we will do what we can to expedite that. Members, we're adjourned.